we all know that there's been a lot of information and hype about LLMs and generative AI, but did you know that there's a new regulation in Europe coming out that's going to affect us? So these were things that are massive on all of our minds. So what I did is I looked and I collected three of the most incredible minds, and then so why don't we just have a fireside chat and go through and have a look at each of the individual areas. We have information or experts on regulation, on the actual science and technology, and also about the implementation as well. So from that point of view, I'm going to start off and just put the floor for you, Constantine. Just quickly tell us a little bit about your area and what is this regulation that's coming to Europe?
Thank you, Tony. Hello, everyone. It's really great to see you again after a few years. What is the regulation? Well, it's another EU regulation. So I think we're all used to Europe regulating, are we not? The regulation came with a political agreement last December. But guess what? It has been in the reels for about 2 years. 2 years ago, the EU Commission started working on a draft AI regulation at a time when no one was speaking about generative AI, or at least generative AI massively and publicly available. ChatGPT and OpenAI came about in November 2022 and like smashed the course of the AI regulation. And the AI regulators, the EU legislator, just realized that they were working on something that was already partly outdated. That was like November 2022, less than a year and a half ago. What happened since then? Since then, the EU legislator found a way to regulate generative AI. There's been a lot of events. It was very, a lot of hurdles and obstacles on the way, a lot of lobbying. You may have heard about Mistral AI, the French company, which is like, you know, they raised 340 million euros in last December. At the same time, they were lobbying heavily against the AI Act. And now they just announced last week, or 10 days ago, a partnership with Microsoft. Just what, yeah, in a nutshell, what this is all about. The viewpoint from the EU legislator is drive trust. AI is a new frontier for the EU legislator, at least, and people have to trust it. In order to use it, they need to trust it. How will they trust it? They will trust it if there are clear rules of engagement by the companies using AI and putting the systems, AI systems, in the market. So there is a principle of accountability. The companies putting in the market AI systems are accountable. They need to be transparent. And the whole approach of the regulation is risk-based. And this is where it can become relevant to everyone in this room. It is risk-based. Based on how your system is categorized, you will have it will be prohibited, it will be high risk and heavily regulated, it will be low risk and not very much regulated, or it will be minimal risk and not regulated. So everyone around the room, maybe one of the takeaways after this fire chat or this afternoon will be to think about where my systems fall in this on this scale. Just one example for each level, and then I'll turn the floor to Radwan. But what is like prohibited for the EU? Prohibited is facial recognition, social scoring. Remember what's happening in China, what is happening right now in China, what has happened for years. This will not happen in the EU. You will not be socially scored. You will not be facially recognized even for the Paris Olympics July, August. There will be no facial recognition live. You will not be able to put a system in the market that reads upon behavior, emotions, real time, and manipulates human behavior. That will you'll not be able to do. You will not be able to put a weapon on a drone and send it to wherever and kill someone based on an automated decision. That you will not be able to do in the EU. However, you can do a lot of other things with AI that could be classified as high-level risk in the medical sector, any AI in the HR sector, AI in education, any automated decisions that have an impact on people, their freedoms, their choices, that could be ranked as high-level. Attached to that, you have a lot of obligations in the design of the tool, in the supervision of the tool. You have to do to put a CE marking. An AI system is considered now in the EU as a product. So you have to go for a CE marking. So that's all this regulatory environment that we need to get familiar with. And if we're lucky, we are in the, like in inverted commas, you're in the low risk or no risk environment. And there comes the generative AI. So as I said, generative AI, the EU legislator didn't even think about it, generative AI back in November 2022, like ages ago. And the end result of all the lobbying and the negotiations is that it is regulated, generative AI is regulated. There is basically a transparency obligation when you put a model, when you design a large language model, you need to have a sufficiently detailed list of what your sources are. It sounds like innocuous, but it's a big deal for developers of large language models to be able to quote their sources. Why is this important? It's important for the content authors. And this is where the balance was stricken by the EU legislator. They were basically protecting the authors, the content makers. You have this transparency obligation that is now incumbent on the large language models. Is this enough of an introduction?
No, I think it's great. I'm just wondering from Brad and Dan, what do you think about that? From, you know, we've got a new law that's going to stop us from doing a whole bunch of stuff.
I mean, I have a complete extreme view on the laws. For me, laws do not solve problems. They're just the beginning. We had a saying in AI and modeling that said, those who can do, those who cannot simulate. So I'm going to paraphrase. Those who can do, those who cannot regulate. And we believe that through regulation we're going to solve a problem. No. So we end up by, most of the time, people who have a little understanding of the technology who end up defining regulation. And I think this is really happening, unfortunately, in the EU. Whereas we had great talent, a lot of scientists, a lot of AI people, and we may be blocking them. So that's one thing. The second, I don't believe that the regulation solve. I'm going to give another problem. Take, for example, data. We scaremonger people about data. For me, data can save life. It should be considered like blood. We should consider people, encouraging people, give your data. But however, we need to educate them. It's not true regulating, not true forbidding. It's true education, true changing. So that's one. The other thing, something that we haven't considered for the AI system, especially when we consider it from a risk base, we are taking this mainly from the regulation on medical device, for example, because that's how it came actually. And I'm a little bit familiar with the history on how it has been developed. We believe that all the risk are during development and conception. But for AI system, by contrast to other system, actually the risk will happen through the usage, because this system continue living after the users, and maybe what you have designed it for and when you use it will be completely different. And this is something that we haven't considered. This is actually going to be one of the biggest problem. And this is done through the data, through how the system will continue learning. So therefore, I'm more a big believer in peer review, open source, and education, rather than regulation.
Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I live on the application side of these AI systems, and as they start coming online, they're going to become paramount to the activities that I participate in. So I work in a company that does digital investigations. We work alongside law firms and corporations to gain understanding of the massive data problems that everyone's dealing with. Really, the source of all my stress and strain comes from the volume of data that we're creating on a daily basis. As we move through the weeks, the months, the decades, and years as sort of data creators in our organizations, we are creating a lot of liability and benefit. But really understanding that is getting to the root of what your data contains. And I think the AI tools, if used properly, can tell a story, can get you to information faster, can get you to the facts needed on a particular case or a particular matter. And do so much more efficiently and cost-effectively. But with the regulations that are coming in place, they may not be considering all the different issues that could be at play. Data privacy, data protection, what data sources are being built around these large language models to train these different applications. So I believe we're at the early stages. We're in the kicking of the tire stage with AI. Let's see what it can do. Let's be positive about it, but let's be cautious as we move forward into the new world.
Yeah, so Constantine, you said that people wouldn't use AI because they may not trust it unless it's regulated, but I see a lot of the world using ChatGPT and even doing VPNs to try and get in touch with stuff that they can't get in the EU, like Claude 3, just to have access to it. So I'm not sure. Would the EU just become like this dark zone where nobody will go and there will be a backwater, very much like the printing press when that wasn't used in certain countries?
That's right. That's very paradoxical, that trust issue. I was reading a poll about the trust in generative AI, and 73% of people using generative AI trust it. So why did the EU regulate it? I think there is a perception in the European Union that we need to be ethical. We need to take an approach, a value-based approach, rather than a practical or a pragmatic approach to things. This is like the European DNA. Is it as easy as saying that we'll not be doing business in the EU because it's too complicated? The thing is that it's one of the major markets in the world. So we as Europeans will have to understand and comply with the rules, but people like Indians and Chinese and United States, North Americans, they also need to comply with these rules. So it's not like we're put ourselves in a disadvantage with other regions because we are such a large market. The difficulty is scale. The EU regulations, you know, talking about the AI regulation, but we have so many other regulations that pile up. You mentioned the privacy, the GDPR, which applies, the e-copyright directive. We have the Data Act and Data Governance Act, and we have the Cyber Resilience Act coming up. You have so many, a pile of regulations and rules that enterprises need to understand and comply with. The difficulty is the scale of our businesses in the EU. Like the tech giants in the US or in China, they don't really care. They've lobbied. But at the end of the day, they have massive resource to digest the regulation and comply with it or go around it. The issue is with SMEs, with small, medium enterprises in the EU that are faced with an enormous regulatory burden.
So why are they doing it? I mean, it sounds like nobody's going to be able to follow it because they won't have the money. How are they going to do that?
Well, this is maybe what we would be saying with what we're saying with GDPR, but by and large, companies have come up to a standard and have come to a compliance, and GDPR has inspired other systems like Microsoft, even not even countries, but also companies like Microsoft saying, this is my golden standard. I apply it throughout the world. That was part of their communication. Like regulation can also be used as a communication tool. I don't know. That's the challenge. It's. I think it's a good thing to say in the EU you'll never be socially scored. You'll never be officially recognized when you cross over, and or if you're late in a meeting or you do this or that. You know, the perfect citizen at one point of time, but you will not be officially recognized and your face put on a screen that everyone can see on a highway. I think it's a good thing, but. When it comes to drilling into the details and see how you will comply, if you have a high-risk AI system, the obligations for you to go to get this CE marking and be able to put your system in the market is really a pain.
Thank you. And now, if there are any burning questions, we'll have time. We'll come to everybody out here if you have any burning questions. So, Rab, moving on a little bit to the science and the technology. If there's all this regulation in the EU and it's a race to the superintelligence, will we just miss out?
I think so. I mean, probably what would happen is also lots of brains will go somewhere else, and it's already happening. I mean, definitely in Europe, particularly, for example, France, UK, and others, we have great mathematicians, because we shouldn't forget that actually AI is also about mathematics. And what we see now is that there are a lot of brains that are going and working somewhere else. So that's the first thing. There, we might also see new startups that, rather than opening here, opening again in Africa or the US or somewhere else. That's what would happen, especially if we, again, regulate mainly the development and we put much more burden. It becomes sort of like FDA. That's now, this is the regulation that you have to follow. You have to follow this. This is the compliance. It's going to make the costs so high that we're just going to go and do it somewhere else.
Constantine, I mean, that sounds like a nightmare. I mean, you have some influence. Can you help us? This sounds horrible.
It's a great business model for lawyers to be in Europe, let me tell you that. But apart from that, okay, if we take the other example, take Mark Zuckerberg. Was it like 3 years ago, he was at Elysee with Macron, and he was saying, please, please, Emmanuel, regulate me, regulate me. So there is this also this request for regulation by companies, because regulation is also certainty. When you have a rule, at least you know what the rule is and you need to comply with it. I think that the issue is, as you mentioned, Tony, is cost, is intelligence and cost. How will you pay for all the advisors, the internal resources, external resources to identify your systems, to design your systems in a way which are compliant with the regulations? And then how you, because the AI regulation also covers the execution. So it's a lot of added cost. So I understand why Radwan is saying, why would you start your company, data-driven company in Europe, just start it in Africa or in somewhere else, less regulated, and when you're ready, then come to Europe.
So Rad, Dan, we asked for this. We wanted to be regulated. That's your fault. What are you going to say?
I'm not sure, because I think it's serving more the benefits and the cause of the big corporate. And I think it's a lobbying. And if you see even what is happening in the UK with the safety, AI safety, etc., it's mainly the corporates who are behind that. And I think some people are not realizing this.
Yeah, and I think it's also overly broad at this stage. I mean, we're dealing with a technology that is new to many, and very much so new to the regulators. We saw it with GDPR. You take this very broad approach to the problem, hope to capture everything, and then through enforcement, you start to define the guardrails and create understanding of what's right and wrong in terms of dealing with your data. One of the things that I think is extremely beneficial from any of these types of regulations that are being put in place is that it's forcing companies and individuals to understand and know what they carry and make sure that they are cognizant of the data that they hold as an organization. I think as we start moving forward and we have this I guess, environment of the right data to hold, you start getting into a world where we can start analyzing that data and using it in such a way that's beneficial for the organizations that we run. Unfortunately, the history of how we create and store data is a bit of a Wild West right now. People don't really, it's cheaper just to hold it than to categorize it or get rid of it. And the sources for AI need good data to drive the systems. So even though it's a little bit hard at the moment, it's a little bit frustrating at the moment, it's setting up an environment where these AI systems might prove very beneficial because the right data is going to be entered into these systems, and that is gold and that is powerful. So I do think right now it hurts the small player. I think in the long run, just knowing your data puts you at an advantage and puts you in a better position.
So to come to you, Dan, your company has areas both in the EU and outside.
Yeah.
Which would you choose for your investigation? Which would you say, oh, I'd hate to be in the EU, or I'd hate to be outside? How do you even answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, there are different frustrations. I mean, when I first started practicing as a lawyer in the United States and really sort of asking questions about data, it was everything. You know, you could go into a corporation, you could go to an individual and say, hey, I need X, Y, and Z, and I got it all. When I moved to Brussels and started working out of Belgium and had my first exposure to European sensibilities around data and data protection and data privacy, it became less about gathering everything and became much more of a targeted exercise. I'm one of the very few people that saw a benefit in GDPR because I now have clients that know where their data is. I now have clients that when I say, you know, where can I find so-and-so's information, I don't know answers. I get very clear and concise answers as to where their data now lies. We're now moving into a new paradigm when it comes to data where in historical cases that I've worked on, I was targeted and measured. We're now dealing with a situation where AI systems work better when they have more information. So we're moving into an era that we're trying to get away from targeted, measured approaches and into a sort of larger collection. Now, that will benefit the U.S. style. As I said before, everything goes in terms of data collection there. So we're going to have to figure out a way to still get those important data points that are necessary to drive these systems. And that might be a bit of a struggle in the EU because of these other competing regulations that prevent us from getting the information necessary to drive these systems.
So we don't, it seems to me that all the big AI systems, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't in Europe, and they're all external, all the big ones, is that correct? Are there any really, really good European AI systems?
Mistral AI.
No. It's not only Mistral. I mean, again, most people now are looking to Mistral because they are looking to generative AI and LLMs. Again, this is only just a part of the story. I mean, there was, again, if you would have asked me about LLM a few months ago, I would have told you a lot of hype. I think there was something behind. I think it has changed the way of thinking. So, but in a nutshell, what is it is when you are typing, for example, on your Apple or your iPhone, it's a predictive system. It just predicts what is the next word. But the difference is that it is a much more powerful because it has been trained on a larger model, hence the Raj model. But what we came up with, and I think what it has changed, so I was going to come on explaining that this is only part of the game. Large models and generative things, it has changed probably something. Maybe what we have learned is that it tells us, maybe, guys, you have been looking into the wrong way how to look into languages. We've been considering languages mainly as a structure, as syntax, grammar, and semantics. Now, actually, large language models say, hey, what does it mean, semantics? Actually, everything is just probably a question of frequencies and statistics. That's more about ChatGPT, is the conversational. But this is more a question of user interface, and it's telling you that the world is becoming more and more conversational. The future is conversational, including for coding, for development, for whatever. These are, for me, the two aspects. Having said that, large language model, generative AI, is just the part of the game. There are other type of models, other type of techniques, and some techniques are actually even much more advanced than LLMs. I'm just going to mention one of them is what we call causal inference. Don't forget that actually when we are talking about machine learning or even large language, these are statistical learning. So statistics can show you correlation, can give you things, this thing is related. It cannot explain, it cannot give you causality. And if we are moving toward more causal, especially, for example, for treatment, for stuff, that's explainable AI. And actually, Europe is probably heading the game here.
So are these regulations, and then if there's any questions, let me know, is the law going to help our homegrown AI, or is it going to hinder it?
It will... We say in French, an answer from a Normand, it's a region in France, like it cuts both ways. It will, for certain parts, it will facilitate because you'll have a clear framework. You may agree or not agree with it. You may agree with the ethical decisions or not. But you have rules and you need to abide by them, and they're sort of clear. So that will help business. The cost of this all will not help, that's for sure. So it will cut both ways. Maybe the fact that everyone doing business in Europe is subject to this regulation is sort of, at least something we can hang on, but it really gives an advantage to bigger corporations than small companies. That's for sure. I think the game here is, as Radwan is saying, is and Daniel, is the data. How do you access the data? That's a very important thing. In Europe, we have strict regulations on personal data, but now what we also see is the non-personal data. And this is also a space which becomes to be regulated in the EU. Non-personal data, all this wealth of data that are, as Daniel, you were saying, they're costly. We just leave them sit there and not do anything about it. The AI will be able to make sense of this data and use them in a productive way. So access to data is, I think, for me, a great question, which is not directly regulated. So access to data is really the key thing going forward.
Wonderful. Are there any questions for this team? Yeah, Rich.
Is the EU the only place that's looking to regulate AI?
Okay, so if we're talking about regulation, the EU is the first region in the world to have regulated. Were they the first to think about it? No. In the United States, we've had a code of conduct, presidential decree of Joe Biden, October 2023, but it's a presidential decree with a code of conduct. And you have all the tech giants, all the GAFAM and others, they have joined, they were incentivized to join. I don't think they had really the choice not to join, but this is the way the Americans do it. A code of conduct without a sanction, but an agreement that you will be abiding by this set of rules, like ethical rules, which go towards the same direction as the EU. The only difference is that they're not binding, and you do not have like penalties up to 6% of your global annual turnover.
One of the other differences in Europe is that the European Commission tends to codify in sort of single document regulations, whereas a lot of the other parts of the world have those encompassed in many different regulations. I mean, GDPR is a very good example. Everyone thinks that the United States is just very freewheeling with their information, but a lot of their data protection is built into various regulations, hundreds of regulations across the board. It's not just in one place, HIPAA being an example of that. So I do think that even though the EU is the first to sort of codify this, it will be considered a bit of a benchmark. Other countries will take a look at it and see if it works there. But certainly at this stage, given its nascency, it's certainly the first and will be the guidepost, I think, going forward.
If I add something, I think there was fundamental difference between regulation and code of conduct, because code of conduct responsabilizes people. You make them more responsible. And I think this happened in other areas like software engineering, or whether to say, hey, think about it, and consciously you are responsible. I'm not here to punish you.
here in the EU, we are liable as well.
Yeah. So we've got 5 minutes left. Are there any other burning questions for our team? Yes. Dominic. Yes. 1 second. Coming over.
So I have a follow-up question on this, like U.S. versus EU, right? Because like what we see is that in EU, GDPR was introduced, right? And now in the United States, on many state levels, you have those different like privacy acts, right? Like, so what you said about HIPAA and so on, that's definitely true. But like, do you see that actually same thing could be happening with AI, that maybe, you know, it's not going to be on the federal level, and on federal level it's going to stay as a kind of code of conduct, but on the state level maybe different states will start to deploy similar regulations to AI? Or what's your thoughts on that?
I can only go through some of the experiences I had, you know, working first in a law firm in Washington, D.C., and then matriculating over into Brussels at the same law firm, doing basically the same practice, but in an EU location. And I can say my job changed from night to day, or from day to night, however you want to look at it, mostly because of the way data is treated. And I think that some things were made easier in the United States because you had unfettered access to information. But then again, certain privacy and certain protections were trampled upon in doing such a thing. So it really boils down to what rights a country holds most dear, and whether or not they're willing to put those hurdles in front of them to protect those rights. I think it's been made very clear that the EU wants to put that at the forefront, and that will hinder early stage application of these certain AI tools. That's without a doubt. But what I will also say is that if we look again back at the GDPR and how it sort of rolled out across the globe, after that regulation was enacted, even in the United States, you're starting to see a domino effect. You've got California almost mirroring it, and other states going down that same process. So I think once we start defining and understanding really where the benefits and the liabilities come from AI, we'll start to see how those get put into place around the world. So I almost see the EU regulation as the sort of spearhead. You know, this is, you know, we got to get started. You got to start somewhere. Is it going to be perfect? 100% not. Unfortunately, you get the brunt of it in the early stages, but hopefully we just get a better understanding of the better applications of the tools and where they should be used.
So quick question. I guess it's real simple. How do you get it right with regulation? It kind of reminds me of 2008 with derivative mortgage swaps. I mean, most people don't even know what they are, probably me included. But as we go into AI and you have politicians involved and it's a very complex topic, how do you get it right so, like we were discussing, you get the right formula so you don't inhibit innovation, but also you don't violate, you know, some fundamentals on our rights?
So how do you get it right?
Thanks for that insight, yeah, folks.
You made my eye twitch with the credit default swaps because I worked on a case with that, and it just I still have nightmares trying to figure out that one. I believe that you don't get it right on day one. It is an iterative process. I can also say that enforcement is the key to it all. So even though you have these regulations in place, it's how they're being enforced that's really going to dictate how we as the community and the private sector operate within those paradigms. So even, you know, when the sky was falling, when the GDPR was put into place and everyone was hiring DPOs to make sense of the data, no one has really, you know, understood what the enforcement implications are behind that. Sure, we have a few big cases here. Sure, we have a few fines there. But we're still learning the true breadth of it. So again, I think when the regulations are being developed, they're trying to cast a huge net. And then we slowly start bringing that in once we start getting an understanding of the true applications of the various clauses. And I think that will be similar in the AI sphere.
And the final comment from you, Constantine, and Dan?
Yeah.
Sorry, Brad.
Yeah, so I think the difference with GDPR is that with the AI Act, you need to go for CE marking to put a product in the market. So you need to have like the stamp on your product if it is high risk to put it in the market? How do you get it right? For GDPR, I agree, it's not binary. There's a lot of gray areas. There will be a lot of gray areas in the enforcement, the execution and enforcement of the AI Act. No one will be 100% compliant. However, for high risk, the high risk AI solutions, I think that in the CE marking obligation, which is attached to it, I think that you will need to get it right. Like for any, you know, any of the objects that we see, you know, in this room, they're CE marked. So it will be the same for the AI systems, the high risk AI systems.
My view, you're not going to get it right. The only way to get it right is to be humble, to say that we don't know, and to be sure that actually the regulation alone is not going to be enough. I think now all the government, the countries are, some are playing the game, just to show that they are playing, but many are going to realize that it's not going to work. And it could some stuff more collaborative. I am a big believer more in open source reviews, community-based rather than regulation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And if we could give these three gentlemen a round of applause, thank you very much.